Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Young Conductors Podcast.
We are your hosts, Sean and Cole, two conductors on a mission to encourage, educate, and inspire young conductor teachers. All right, so welcome back for another episode of the Young Conductors Podcast. This is episode 11, which is number 3 of our second season, and we're super excited to dive in with our special guests today. So first, without further ado, let's welcome Justin Jones and Pam McLean. Hello, y'all.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, everyone.
Our two guests are very special today because they are our former teachers. Mrs. McLean was Cole's high school choir director, and Mr. Jones was my middle school and high school strings teacher.
Yeah, so like I was saying earlier to Sean, it feels like Mr. Jones has been with Sean for a very long time. So that's, we're excited to hear all the burning things, maybe some embarrassing stories with Sean along the way. We'll see. to start us off, with all of our loads of questions that we have to pick y'all's brain today, the first thing that I'm wondering, and we'll start actually with Mr. Jones, I'm wondering, why did you choose to become a teacher?
I was one of those like odd kids, as my grandparents told me that I had, you know, kids do things when they're little and whatever. So I always felt like I had, my grandparents asked for a Christmas gift one time of like a teacher bag. And that was like second or third grade. So I kind of always wanted to be a teacher, but I think it was when I had some really great memorable experiences, really studying privately with my private teacher in high school, and just kind of having some of those more in-depth experiences that it kind of pushed me toward music. You know, people enjoy things that they do well, and I felt like I was being led, and I had success with my teachers and things like that. So it kind of all worked out, mixed music and teaching together, and music education, we have it.
Yeah. So did you always know music was going to be the option?
Or was it, did you dabble in another? I did not. Actually, when I was in middle school, I thought I wanted to be a math teacher.
Oh, nice.
Because that was probably one of my other favorite subjects. I enjoyed the, you know, you have an answer, there's a reason for it, and that kind of thing, logic. So I enjoyed that, but I kind of caught more of that music bug as I went into high school, and that kind of veered me to the path of music ed as opposed to some other type of field in education.
You definitely strike me as a kid who would play school at home. Like, you probably made your brother be your student. You're like, here's a paper, write your name on it.
I didn't go that far, but I still have it packed away somewhere in my garage. I still have that bag.
Yeah. Oh, that's sweet. What about you, Mrs. McLean? When did you decide to choose the path of becoming a music teacher?
Well, you have to go all the way back to first grade with me. I won't bore you with the every grade details, but I'm going to say my parents were the encouragers. Mm-hmm. They were, they had lovely voices. They both played piano, took piano in their church choirs. And I was the one and only child. And for 15 years until my sister came home. So they provided me, we didn't have much financially, but they would save, and they provided me with so many opportunities at an early age. So I just dove in with piano first grade. I had mentor teachers, even when I was young, that gave me opportunities to perform. You know, fourth grade, I got to accompany a little Sakura play. And I accompanied my sixth grade choir. And then I just found that every music teacher that I had, they were just phenomenal. And it was those mentor teachers and my parents that were encouragers that I was just driven to enjoy the whole experience, music experience along the way. And it just felt like that's where I was headed, and I wasn't even really thinking about it. I wasn't even considering that. I just thought, well, this is my path. And I really felt like I was led to do that.
Mm-hmm. So with what you just said, as you and Mr. Jones are both incredible role models for the both of us, we're sure that you both also have role models. And if you'd like to have a chance to shout them out, that would be great.
Mr. Jones, myself.
Yeah, Pam, you can go ahead. Yeah, go ahead and share, Pam. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, to piggyback off of that, I had a pipe organ instructor named Kathleen Reel. And after I'd had piano for 15 years, my little sweet neighbor lady who gave me piano lessons, who that's what we could afford. But, you know, after John Shaum book 12, you know, I knew it all according to her. So I thought, well, why shouldn't I go into pipe organ when I'm 15? And so Mrs. Kathleen Reel made me audition to become her student. And I thought, what? And just to become her student. And so I'll never forget, I was 15. I went in, I played Flight of the Bumblebee. And wow. I thought, you know, I'm going to really impress her. And I was 15 and I still remember this. I'm 61. She said, how do you get over those keys with such atrocious fingering patterns? It just kicked me to the curb. But I learned more from her in 3.5 years, you know, than I did in piano from first grade. And she was a tough love kind of teacher that I just respected, because she would just tell me, you know, put the cards out on the table. If I didn't practice, I would drive down to the church to if I hadn't practiced that week, and she would hand me the check back and say, now you don't want to waste your mother's money, do you? And you know, I would have to go home and tell my mother, I need to practice more. So, but, and can you believe I'm telling these tough love stories, but she made such an impact on me. And I have to tell you one more thing. She also said, it was my sister who had the long fingers and took from Kathleen Reel as well. And she noticed that my sister was the fabulous organist. And she, Mrs. Reel one time said, you know, you have a beautiful voice. And so that meant, oh, I think maybe I should go that route. So in comes my choral teacher on the high school level. And her name was Jean Singer, and she just passed away a week and a half ago. And I just said, what an appropriate name, Jean Singer. Mm-hmm. And she's an icon. And she became a dear, dear friend. But I just always said that I just respected her influence over my life, that I just could never call her Jean. And she would always get upset with me and say, you know, don't call me Mrs. Singer, call me Jean. And I said, okay, Mrs. Singer, you know. So, so Jean Singer. And then I had two on the collegiate level that came to mind immediately, Dr. Judson Bracey from Alderson Broaddus and Dr. Tim DeWitt from Alderson Broaddus. Mm-hmm. They were both, you know, I was not an instrumental side per se, but they just became such great, not just teachers, but friends, and they cared about you. So those are the names I'm throwing out there.
It's funny because Sean and I both had Dr. DeWitt at our time during WVU. And so that's kind of awesome to have that similar experience, because I'm assuming he was your brass teacher, your brass
Well, editor. Also, I'm thinking it was like form and analysis, but
nice. Yeah. Okay.
I will say that I broke him in. My class broke him in because I had him as a first year teacher on the college level. He came from West Virginia Symphony.
Yeah.
The piccolo trumpet. he's a wonderful person, and still is able to see.
He would bring his dog to class sometimes.
Yes.
And also the peanut butter cake or peanut butter pie. Cake.
Yeah. So good.
Good memories with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm.
So, Mr. Jones, why don't we move to you? If you want to name some role models that guided you towards this career.
Yeah. So, after hearing Pam say about some like her experiences, it makes me think back to like, it'll kind of go hand in hand with this. I think about people that I had as teachers that kind of put me in positions to be successful. And to have those unique opportunities. It's just funny. I always tell students, like, the music world isn't that big, and it's going to come together real quick in this, in these people. The first one is when I was in middle school, I had my middle school band director, Terry Bartnicki, which Sean had received instruction from as a student too. She had, her daughter was a bassist, a professional bassist, went to college, stuff like that for it. And I remember there was a bass in the band room at the middle school, which is now one of the schools where I teach at. And she was like, you know, you should really think about picking up another instrument, because she knew I played violin. But then she, we went to, it was like a showcase afternoon with the Wheeling Symphony Youth Orchestra, which was Ovations at the time. And they took some small ensembles and we went and played. And the youth orchestra played after that. And she says, you need to do this. And then she put me in contact with Ben Podolsky, who I then started taking private lessons with in eighth grade, which then led me to actually transfer school districts to go for that experience in high school. And, you know, you're talking about people who have longevity and stuff like that in your life. You know, it went from teacher to friend, colleague, mentor, like everything of it. You know, he and I talk quite frequently throughout the week about just so many things. But I would say he kind of was that person, we talk about like private lesson people who have that impact on you. That was where that came from for me. And then I had a ton of really other great role models in my high school career. Not all of them that I had, but Pat Garrett, again, now a friend, colleague, just things coming full circle. And I think I reiterate to high school, those people giving me the opportunity to, I think like Pam said, you get in those situations and after so many of those memorable experiences and success, you think, well, I can't think of anything else I should be doing. This is what I should be doing.
Yeah.
You know? So I definitely think that was, you know, a lot of great people in that way. You know, going to college, I had a lot of, I was thankful for, I thought at the time my violin professor was going on sabbatical for a year. And I thought that was going to be the end of the world because it was my junior year. And I'm like, oh no, but that ended up kind of being one of those blessings where I got to study for a year with a visiting professor who had a completely different perspective. So it was great to be able to have two of those close mentors that you worked with, John Wilcox, Christo Popov, that I took lessons with during those college years, again, setting you up and giving you opportunities that you wouldn't have otherwise had. And I think like Pam was saying, again, I go back to that. It sets you on the path of like, yeah, this is it. You know, you're getting opportunities to do things. They're guiding you and it just kind of reassures what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, coming back into the teaching world now, I think about, you know, like I said, Ben Podolsky and, you know, another person, Mary Hanley, she was my kindergarten music teacher for 1 year. And from that 1 year, the only year I had her, she's been a huge influence and support all the way through for that. So it, numerous people, you know, that have supported that and along the way. So very fortunate to have a lot of those people along my musical journey thus far.
It's great to hear you talk about how your teachers gave you the opportunity to succeed, because you certainly did that for me with like strings camp. You would say, why don't you take these like two or three fourth graders and help them out? And then I conducted on our very final concert, like the whole group. So you also do that for your students and very thankful for that.
Yeah. And same thing for Mrs. McLean. You know, I think this is a beautiful thing about this path and this profession that we've all chosen, is that it's really the gift that keeps on giving in a lot of ways. And I feel like there's so much commonality in the sense that a lot of people chose this path because of the people that poured into them, you know. And so I know that Sean and I are just over the moon that both of you are here having these conversations with us because of the impact that both of you had on us, you know. Actually, I remember when I was thinking about college, Mrs. McLean, we had a conversation, and I was originally pre-med at WVU, which is just crazy to think about. Honestly, I wanted to be a psychiatrist. So I don't know what was going on, but then I remember you telling me, you're like, are you sure you want to do that? And I was like, well, what else? What else is there? And you were like, what about teaching? And I was like, oh, like maybe history. And you were like, music. And I was like, oh, you know, and it was just like, oh, is that like you know, that is, that unlocked a door for me, you know. And then all the opportunities you gave me my senior and junior year definitely helped influence that. And so I know from the bottom of our hearts, we really appreciative of y'all, just like you are, of your role models and how special it is to now have these conversations in a different light other mm-hmm. than students. You know, how many years since we've graduated high school, and here we are in our own career paths. It's pretty exciting. So I'm wondering.
I would just say the theme is teachers inspire teachers.
Mm-hmm.
That this is like Justin said, full circle moments when, you know, I know Justin, I'm sure just as proud sitting here now as you are, you all are asking us to be on your podcast. You know, we're thanking you for, you know, just carrying on a legacy that will be more grand than anything that I could have ever shared, you know, as a professional. So that's, I think the whole point is to watch students grow, develop, make music them a part of who they are, and mm-hmm. give back in their own ways. And then it becomes even more grand than what your experience was. And that's the goal, is to, want the best and betterment for your students. So teachers influence other teachers, and it mm-hmm. is a mm-hmm. wonderful full circle. And just as Justin said, you can't just give credit to the high school. You know, I feel honored that you selected me. You have a lot of names on your list. But there are tidbit moments that are pivotal for your growth and development mm-hmm. and where you're headed next and whatever path that road leads. But, and I too had a kindergarten teacher. She was, went to our church, but she was a wonderful kindergarten teacher, and she would have us bring in for rest time, nap time, albums, our favorite album that we wanted to bring in. And, you know, I would bring in Mary Poppins, you know, or musicals or something. And we would all, you know, lay on our mats, but she would say, well, Pammy brought in, you know, this record. Yeah. So I was five, for heaven's sakes, but she was such a lovely person that included music into her kindergarten class. And Mrs. McDonough was my elementary teacher. And she saw something in me that said, you can accompany my fifth and sixth grade choirs. And I mean, how wonderful was that? I mean, she had faith in me. And just like Justin mm-hmm. said, then you started seeing, oh, would you lead that sectional? Would you play that part for this group? And those little tiny leadership roles just flourished into a profession.
Mm-hmm. Pretty profound, even if they seem small in the moment. You know, I can think about how my senior year I conducted the alma mater at every single award ceremony as part of the student leadership team. And like, that seems silly now. It's like, but I remember I like loved every single moment of it. And I felt like there was trust on a certain part mm-hmm. that you were giving me this opportunity to do that. So I couldn't agree more. But to transition for the sake of time and all that jazz, I'm wondering, Mr. Jones,
mm-hmm.
do you have just a favorite moment of teaching, something that like pops in your head? I know that there are probably many for both of you, but I'm just wondering, do you have like one specific moment?
That's a hard question.
Like. Yeah,
it is because I feel like there are different types of moments and why they were special. Sometimes it's a performance. Sometimes it's an experience mm-hmm. with the people that you performed with. Sometimes it's a piece. I was actually talking to Sean about this earlier today. I'll go with the generalization. I'll go with a one topic, not a one moment. Going off of what Sean said, when I first started teaching, I was fortunate enough to be able to teach elementary school strings. And then as the program grew, I kind of expanded with that. And my senior class that's graduating this year is kind of like a last, like, you know, period on the end of a chapter, if you will, because they are the last students that I would have got to have from fourth through 12th grade. There were two schools that I was still at the time, teaching elementary, middle, and high school together. And I think there are five kids out of like my 16 seniors that are from that school. So I think one of the special things about music is there's longevity, there's relationships that you build, whether it's high school or, well, you know, we always have students for multiple years. But I think that is the most memorable thing about, in my mind, is being able to be on that journey with them throughout the whole time that we're together. And especially what's special for me for this senior class is that they, Sean was one of those students, that they were with me their whole career, their whole strings career. And in this case, for these seniors, that's 9 years. And I kind of jokingly tell them, I say, you know, guys, how old are you? You're 18. Okay, great. How long you've known me? 9 years. I was like,
literally,
yeah.
Half of their life.
I was like, you've been with me half of your life. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a scary thing, but I said, whatever it is, we've made it this far together. And I think that is one of the most memorable things that I take away from, I think, every year. It's just that longevity of relationship that you develop, whether you're at a middle school only with the kids or whatever, there's always that, that continuity and the value you get to know, not only the students, but their families and just everything. So I think that's one of the things that I would say was like a very special moment, if you will, but it happens every year. And I'm reminded of it at this time at the end of the school year, that that's one of those special things about what we get to do.
Yeah.
Would you like to hear my side?
Yes, Mrs. McLean, yes, please.
Just like, there's no one moment, but it does come in an overview, and that is, it's always intimate and personal between the ensemble and myself. It's not really an audience-shared moment. Moments to me mean your classroom is now a democracy. You have shared your knowledge, imparted knowledge, and they are giving feedback and they are invested. It's a high point for me when you hear them and you see them raising their hand and they're invested and they're speaking musical terms right back at you. And they're holding themselves accountable for music. And that's, they don't know it, but like, fireworks are going off, you know, in my heart, thinking they really, you know, they've really taken the understanding. They understand the lesson plan or whatever, but they've made it their own, and they have pride and they want to hold each other accountable. The other highlight I would say is it's the silence at the end of a piece. It's that those few nanoseconds that allow you to take in what was just performed and make decisions about that piece in constructive ways, in positive and in constructive ways. So there's a lot said for silence at the end of a piece, that just those few seconds that cause you to, it's a special time. It's a special time that causes you to reflect and feel that experience that just happened and that you just created.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. So I'm wondering.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead, Sean.
Okay. Yeah. So with all these conversations, it's very apparent that literally your whole entire heart goes into this type of career.
And then some.
Yeah. Right. And Mr. Jones and I actually were talking about this earlier today. Like, even when you're not at school and you're not doing something that's specifically for your job, you're still doing something else that is probably music related. So I think it's very easy to get tired or burnt out. And Mr. Jones, do you have any type of thing that you do when you start feeling that way? I know we talked about like the weekends, like make sure the weekends are an actual weekend and try not to plan anything. So if you have anything, any advice on burnout or being tired?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that I do that I think kind of have helped keep that. And I think it's something that you develop over your teaching career. Pamela, I'm sure we'll have a ton of input on that, having a really long and successful career. I mean, so far, I would say that, first of all, your body is going to tell you when you need a break.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to tell you. And when it tells you, you need to listen. So that's the first thing. And whatever that means for you, you know, sometimes I think, I know kids joke about it, but I joke about it. I'm like, I have a bedtime as a grown adult. I have a bedtime. And I do that because I know that I need a time to shut down and shut that off. I think also knowing what can be left for tomorrow. I think walking out at the end of the day, my desk, if I have a clear desk, doesn't matter that everything's done, but that I can walk out and I have a clear space that I can walk into with a clear desk the next day, that sets me up for, regardless of what happened the day before, whether it was good, whether it was bad, whether it was up, down, whatever, I go in with literally, figuratively, a clean slate that I can start with and restart. That kind of helps me. And it also gives me an endpoint closure that I can do. That's not always possible. I will say it's not always possible, but I think also finding times to maximize when you're in your building and your job to do your job. It's really easy, I think, to get caught up in other elements of the school and stuff like that. That really don't do you any good as a professional, as a person. And it's just extra pollution that you can be utilizing and maximizing. You know, if you have a 40-minute plan, did you use that 40-minute plan today? You didn't? Well, you have nobody to blame yourself for not having it and taking advantage of that. So I think making sure that you're using all that time. And, you know, there are times of the year when it does get to be a lot. And there are some times where I've come home and I've shut down, like turn off the electronics and like, nope, radio silence. And you just need some time for yourself to step away from things. And I think all of those are good. And I think it's also knowing, listening to your body, listening to yourself, knowing when you can push and when you need to say, hey, we got to step back and reevaluate things.
Yeah.
So again, that's different for everybody, but I think just being self-aware of that and having some strategies for how to do that for whatever your situation is.
Yeah, that's great. I never knew you were so zen. That's good to know.
I will say also that coming, like, as I've gotten more in my teaching career, I think I've realized not everything is worth your energy. That where do I want to put that energy? And I want to put it in the classroom and make sure that whatever focus I'm doing is on that time that you have with kids in the classroom.
Yeah.
And I'll go even one step further. I think it's about mindset and how you frame the situation. In life, anybody can say, you can say, it's a very basic thing. Let's say you're going outside and you're an elementary teacher and it's raining outside. You go, oh my gosh, we have to be inside for recess. No. Okay. Yeah. You know what? It probably is miserable. I would agree with all those kids in a small room, but how can you frame that in a way that says, you know, we get to be inside today. I'm going to teach all the students how to play Go Fish. They don't know card games. They're on screen. What are you going to do? And the kids will give back to you what you give them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think going going with that same thing, setting that up for a mindset of how are we going to handle a problem, I think all goes back to trying to avoid burnout and just stay refreshed and renewed. Yeah. Because mm-hmm. sometimes you get to have that. You got to have those times and knowing what you do for yourself, regulate it and go on. So sorry, that was a lot. It just led to a lot.
No, it was great. Okay. All good stuff.
Yeah. Mrs. So, McLean, do you have any thoughts?
You don't want to ask me that because Justin is the role model for understanding. He's in it, you know, he's in the classroom. He's able to separate and understand those boundaries. It does come with boundaries, comes to mind. I was never good at it, And I'll be the first to admit, it broke my health down from time to time. And you can learn from me from Hard Knocks, because I was the one, and I know Cole has heard me say this in probably other settings, but you can learn from, you know, make this a positive thing. But that was the hardest part, actually, was it's not burnout for me. It's never me not wanting to be in the classroom, never me not wanting to teach. It's not like that, like I can't do this anymore. It's all of the, not stigma, but all of the balls juggling in the air, all of the expectations that cause that stress to come upon you. And I'm a people pleaser. I'm a perfectionist. Those are not good terms. They're not positive. So, you know, and I had unrealistic expectations. And as I got older, I did see my classes and my groups evolving and developing and becoming, somebody said, what was your best group? My last one, because I was learning each year. Mm-hmm. And that last group, you know, was because they're a mirror. They're your mirror, you know, you're mirroring what you want to hear from them. I sought professional help. I never managed my time well in the evenings. I was always burning the candle at both ends. I think that's a mental and an emotional juggling act that's very difficult. And mm-hmm. I appreciate Mr. Jones saying what he did, because I'm always trying to hear how other people do this.
Yeah.
And I will just finish by saying I did improve my balancing act, but I will say that I just came to a realization close to the end of my public teaching career that I was the person who had the stack of papers and couldn't. I would do three things and then stack five more. And I sought professional help. And one time my doctor said, who was a singer, by the way, and said, I need you to come back. I need you to bring me your calendar, your daily calendar. And I go, okay. So I went back, showed him a calendar. He said, this is Thursday. You have 47 things that you need to accomplish between now and Sunday. How are you going to do this? Are you going to be able to do that? I said, heck no. And he said, then you're setting yourself up for failure. That was a shock to my system, but that rang true like none other. Like, mm-hmm. okay, you're right. What am I going to do? And he said, you're going to, like Mr. Jones said, you're going to separate, you know, leave the part of the stack there that can wait till another day.
Yeah.
But I didn't learn my lesson. What did I do? I took the stack and made it into three short stacks.
You got another desk.
This looks more manageable. So I'm not, I'm a person that you can learn from as to what not to do, but there's nothing wrong in seeking professional guidance and help. Mm-hmm. And so it's not burnout, but at the same time, it's an obsession with the expectations. We had a community mm-hmm. of high expectations for the fine arts. So I was just always wanting to live up to the expectation of my teacher, whose place I took 20 some years later. Mm-hmm. They were unrealistic. They were all supportive. The whole community was supportive, but I was just thinking I'm only as good enough as that next performance. So mm-hmm. it's not a good thing, but it's out there now. You've heard yeah. me.
But I think it's something that young conductor teachers can take away, you know, is thinking yes. about the things that both of you shared. Like, we have examples of things that you can try and things that maybe to think about in your future. I mean, I know that, you know, conversations that you and I have had, this is the thing that expectations can be pretty, pretty daunting, you know, coming into a place that mm-hmm. the community expects things, the students, your fellow teachers, former teachers, all the things. It can be pretty daunting, but I think we have to remember that we're humans. Mm-hmm. And I think it's okay to mess up. I think it's okay to have trial and error and be like, this doesn't work for me and this does, you know. I don't think one fix is going to fit everyone, you know. And I think that you listeners have to just be willing to admit, this does not work for me. What's something else I can try? And find role models, people in your life who have been doing this longer than you, that might have a different perspective and a different take. So thanks for sharing that. And hopefully that gave some inspiration and some things for people to try and to think about, even in their own teaching experiences. So mm-hmm. I want to transition into our last question for y'all, which is really important. And I hope you listeners turn up the volume. I hope you put your headsets on and blinders on and all the things. And I'm wondering what advice both of you would give to a young conductor teacher, someone who's approaching this career path, maybe as a college student, or somebody who maybe is still fresh into their career and pretty young. And I think, Mrs. McLean, what if we start with you this question?
Well, I think the one takeaway I would say is, you know, once your student walks in your classroom, they will be forever changed, and so will you. So I would just take that as a teacher, as you know, from the teacher's point of view, that you're going to change lives because they walked into your classroom, but they will change you as well for the better. So that's important. I did write down it. Let me just look. So I would say to music teachers in general, you'll never regret the profession that you're in. You will never regret becoming a music teacher. You knew going into this that it wasn't going to be about financial. You knew it was going to be a rewarding experience that would last a lifetime. Let me see. So I wrote these things quickly. Do your homework. Know your student pop. Don't fly by the seat of your pants. Know your student population, and also know you have to set the precedent on the first day, and then you can pull back the reins. But that first day is valuable. I know there are lots of piddly things going on all day, and you've got to take attendance. Blah blah blah. No, you establish the environment that you want, you know, the tone of the environment that you want in your classroom. You can always pull back the reins from there. But if you're working on establishing a rapport and, by the way, these are the rules, you'll just always be fighting that. So, you know, always do your homework, always be planning ahead. Plan in the summer for the next season. Don't wait for solo and ensemble to be a month away. You know, you want to always plan ahead of time. So that's not just on the planning.
I also want to say one little fun fact about Mrs. McLean. I thought about this actually last night in preparation for this. Is not only does she set the expectations, like what was it, routine and procedures at the beginning of the year, but she makes you define what a routine is and what a procedure is, or what a rule. I can't remember what your sheet was, and I think it was a contract. So not only did she set them, but she made you understand what a procedure was on the very first day. You know, I think that kind of stuck with me throughout that time. So I think that's pretty good advice to be, to set those up front and then follow through. That's another thing to follow through with them. But
yeah, I just tried to swap out the word rule and infiltrate procedure, because it was a positive reinforcement and rules sounded so negative. But you're right, I did give an easy 20-point quiz. And then I knew who were going to be who my good listeners were going to be. So, Cole, did you get a 20 out of 20 on my quiz?
I hope because so. You were Mr. Jones,
No, she's got more. I know she's got more.
She's rolling them out.
Just two more quick things. Establish attainable short goals. And then establish one grand dream, you know, something that you don't think that's attainable, but you're still going to work toward trying. So, you know, attainable short goals, but one big goal, like, you know, maybe a piece that you thought, oh, my group could never do that. But you're always, always working on it. So, yep.
That's great.
Good advice.
I felt like Sean and I were looking into each other's eyes as Pam was saying some of these things.
For sure.
Sound familiar, Sean?
It definitely does.
It's like, you know, well, you didn't listen to Dad, so listen to Mom now because she said it, you know?
Right, right.
I agree 100% about, you know, setting up. I like Pam said, what was your best year teaching this year? Because it's ever changing. Your kids are never the same. You have your ways, but you know, you can't teach. I mean, it was a thing. It's like, are you going to teach the same year 30 times? Or are you going to teach 30 years? You know, what are you going to do? Because it's a different group of kids. It's a different time. You got to adapt. But I think the first thing that she said was you got into it. You know, it's not going to be easy, but it's going to be rewarding. You know, it's a career of passion, and planning, knowing what you want. I'll take it one step further. I always like to say, where do you want to be at the end? How much time do you have to get there? And then fill it in based on what the skills are. So I think about that when I'm picking rep. I got 7 weeks to do it. How do I realistically get here? And, you know, day zero, the concert is not the day when you want to be ready to go, you know? So I think planning out, like you said, you know, you're picking solo and ensemble music, not in January, like, you know, a month before it happens, you're picking it now. You know, and I think that's something that's really challenging as a young new teacher, because you don't have anything to reference. You don't have anything to base it on, you know, at that point, go find mentors, go find colleagues that have been in the building, been in your shoes, in your field, and be like, look, hey, I want some things that are going to set me up for success with these students. So I think just building and developing that bag of tricks, stealing ideas from everybody else, anything you see, write it down. I literally have a document that is string ideas, and I just throw them in there. And I started doing this a couple of years ago. It's like, what are three things that I want to do next year? What are three things that I want to do? They could be as simple as I want to clean up how our room entry is at the beginning of class. And I feel like over the past 2 years, I've done that. We have a system and it's great. I didn't think about that my first year. I also didn't think that was a priority. You know, maybe I'll pick a skill that I'm like, you know, I really want my kids to learn. By the time they leave middle school, I want them to learn how to shift into a different position. Do I want them to be fluent? No, but I want them to have those experiences by the end of this year. And then maybe it's something for me. Like, you know, one of my goals this year was to apply for an honor ensemble. Okay. So that was something. And it's like, here are three things. There are so many things that you could do, but pick three things: realistic, a far-fetched one, you know, and have it. And, you know, maybe you're one of those people that you need it up above your computer or above your desk. Every time you look at it and you check up there, October, be like, okay. You get to January, be like, okay, this is going okay. Or you see, hey, I haven't even started my goal. Just something to, and I think the thing is, you put stuff in digestible amounts. You don't try to eat a whole sandwich at one time. Okay, you're going to get sick. So you take it in pieces. And I think that's the thing, you know, Pam was talking about piles. You know, you put them in the smaller things. And I think I say this all because this is stuff that, you know, I struggle with trying to do a lot early on in my career. And I think it was trying to find that, where's that balance at and what's acceptable and, you know, meeting the goals of whether it's admin or community or what you think people are expecting of you. I think it's just trying to find that. And I think writing down goals, writing down pros and cons for what you're doing, you know, you put the weight on, is this really that important? What is the focus of what we need to do? So I think just kind of always having that reflective mind, forward thought, and where are you going in the end? And I think just kind of checking in on those every so often reminds you, oh, do I need to get back, or are we still on the way to, you know, the end of May with what we set out to do at the beginning?
Yeah. Those are all really good tidbits of information. And I hope that people are listening in and feeling some encouragement and feeling some new ideas and ready for
I'll say, even though I hear this a lot from Mr. Jones, it is refreshing again as a first year public school teacher to hear all of these things again. And it's refreshing to hear what the both of you went through, like during your beginning years of teaching. Cause it's not, I'm thinking, oh, it's not just me. Like, this is just how it is with young first year teachers. So.
And I think that's something too, that I think a lot of people think that it's just them. It's not, you know, when you start talking to other people, you know, I'll say this also, find someone that you can talk to freely and trusting to be able to share. You need to have an outlet that I've always had one colleague that I have been able to go to and share as I knew that was going to be able to be shared, would give me honest feedback, and I didn't have to worry. And I felt safe about, you know, sharing frustrations, trouble in the classroom, you know, all those things. And just knowing that you have those other people who understand what you're teaching, what you're going through, and can kind of empathize with you while also kind of grounding you back to like, okay, you can do this, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, thank you, Mr. Jones, and thank you, Mrs. McLean. This has been wonderful. And I think that our listeners and viewers will definitely appreciate this episode.
As much as we
thank
have.
You.
So, for sure.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for having us.
Wow. Yeah, of course.
Really enjoyable. Thank you. And all the best to both of you.
Well, thank you.
Well, thanks. Appreciate it. We're all on the journey together, so you both are along for the ride, whether you like it or not. So
that's true.
Yeah, we're excited to see what happens, and I think I speak for both of us when we say that we hope that we have, you know, a fraction of the influence on our students as you both have had on us. So, yeah. Well, thanks so much for tuning in to this amazing episode, and hopefully you found some tidbits and all the things. Yes, thanks again, both of you, for joining us. And without further ado, we hope you all have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.